when I was 10, I was in Thailand and heard about trafficking, and it was kind of the break of my innocence in like what went on in the world. You know, this needs to be stopped, and just this passion started in me, like this is a thing and this isn't cool. These are girls my age, and you know, still girls my age, and it's like this just can't be going on.
Okay, we are recording.
We are the voice of the under 25s.
I'm currently shut myself in a toilet.
How on earth do you become a lollyologist?
The bag with my blood in it. My blood.
Our stories, what we think, the truth.
And how long have you been sort of on the streets? On and off for a year.
We got told that he was killed in a motorcycle accident.
If we can't create a ginger army to take over the world, then we can at least lobby the government for tax-free sun cream.
Podium.me. This is your platform.
Hi, my name's Alice. I am 20 years old and I am currently living in London.
Alice is 20, she's slight, and she's well-spoken. She started out our conversation by telling me why she didn't go to university.
So I decided when I finished my college that I really wanted to go to Hong Kong and be a part of this. I wanted to be learning, but I didn't want to be in university. I wanted to really get out, and I'd also like recently just become a Christian, and I was like, I really want to do something that's like really helping the world, and that's kind of, yeah, went out there and had no idea what was about to hit me. I was totally not equipped for being in that environment, being like an 18-year-old girl, really optimistic and full of life. I was like, oh crap, this goes on in the world, and this is what people's lives are like, and how do I help? It was about, yeah, really loving them and getting to know them and making friends and playing music and playing games and hearing them out and forgiving and, yeah, which was like seeing guys get off drugs and withdraw from like heroin addiction in a few days through prayer was incredible. Yeah, going from the place where they couldn't like walk, couldn't get into the bath by themselves, they had to be carried and stuff, to then after a couple of days being clean, and they would just come up and be like, I don't understand, why is this happening? What is this? What is going on? I've never heard of this before. And seeing that and the power of that was just like, whoa, okay, there's something really real here, and this is awesome. You'd forget that they are supposed to be in jail and the kind of backgrounds that they come from. And also, especially being a girl was really tough because their interaction with girls before were all in brothels and whatever, you know. So the way they saw you, like especially at first, was just like, pff, you know, they see you as really down there kind of thing as a girl. So being able to build a friendship and try in every way to let them not see you as a female but as a friend was really hard. And there were some times where, yeah, definitely times when I felt not unsafe. I never felt like I'm in a situation that I can't get myself out of. Crap, what am I going to do? I don't think, not that I remember anyway, and I think I would. I always knew that it was okay, but there were definitely times when I was like, crap, like this is scary, and these guys are dangerous. And they're awesome, but they are dangerous. And, you know, there would be knife fights and stuff between the guys, and luckily, like, obviously, we wouldn't get involved. But, yeah, there were times when you felt like, I think, yeah, especially as a girl, you would feel really objectified and that kind of horrible feeling, not an unsafe feeling, but just like, ugh.
She then told me about a woman named Jackie Pullinger, who at a similar age 50 years ago had a dream to help drug addicts in Hong Kong and traffic girls in the Philippines.
And yeah, she's a really cool lady. She went out there when she was 18 and started this whole thing. It obviously started off really small, and then now she's like 70, I think. So yeah, she's brilliant. And she has this place called Syngman Springs in Hong Kong, which is on top of a mountain, and you basically help the guys and the girls who have been caught up in addiction. And it's often like they've been in gangs and stuff like that. And it's just amazing. I think it was amazing hearing their stories and making friends with them, with these, like, I don't know, it was kind of from the age of 12 to 50-year-old guys who were, a lot of them, really gruff.
Alice spent time in Hong Kong with Jackie, but she later went to a safe house for trafficked girls in the Philippines.
The thing I think that really struck me about the girls is just how happy they are and how full of life they all are. And I spoke to this one girl called Minda, because she was a real babe. I really enjoyed Minda. She looked about 50s or younger, actually, 14, 15, really skinny old girl with, like, a huge smile with, like, missing teeth. She was beautiful and amazing. And we were cleaning the house. She ran up to me and grabbed my hand and was like, let's do the chores together. So I was like, great. So we went outside into the garden and started washing the rugs on, like, those, you know, with buckets of water and mm-hmm. the scrubby things. And it was great. And as the bubbles came up, she said, oh, this is what I used to do with my mum. And she was like, when I was with my mum, we would be washing the clothes. And then when the bubbles came, she'd blow them at me and all these bubbles would come. And she said, I used to find it really funny when I was little. And that kind of broke into her life story. So she said that wasn't actually her real mum. And she said her real mum was a prostitute in Filipino slums. And back then it was very... It still is, the Philippines, but a very Catholic culture, very Catholic origin. And her mum got pregnant through one of the guys. And because the baby, Minda, was born very prematurely, she was very small and kind of a bit squashed and didn't obviously have the right birth care or whatever. And some strong beliefs that they had, which had, you know, obviously been warped and whatever it was, but basically her belief was that this baby was from the devil and wasn't a normal baby, so she shouldn't keep her. And so the baby just got left on the top of a table and, like, just wrapped in rags. The mum went on with her work, like, didn't really think about what this baby was. And Minda now has, like, cigarette scars on her scalp, on her skull. And, yeah, where hair doesn't grow. Yeah, kind of gives an example of the way that she was treated when she was there. Some people found her. It was actually a couple found her on the table and basically said, we really need to take care of this baby. And she was very close to death. But they said, okay, if she's a monster, if she starts, like, biting us, then we'll leave her, you know, but let's take care of her. Obviously, she's just a newborn baby. And so they took care of her and were very kind to her, but they were also very poor living in these slums. And she said she grew up and, like, would run around the streets and people would laugh at her because she smelled really bad and she used to eat stuff out the bin. But she said she was always really happy. She just always wanted to be naughty and get into mischief mm-hmm. and stuff. Anyway, then her mum died. The mum that was caring for her died, and the guy couldn't take care of her on his own. So she got sent to an orphanage, and she actually got moved from orphanage to orphanage, and they were taken care of by nuns and very strict environment. And she said she remembers being in one of the orphanages and, the nun told her that her dad had died, the guy had died. And the nun said something like, it's better off that he's dead anyway, because he wasn't a great man. And this upset Minda a lot because it was the only family she felt she had. So she ran away from the orphanages and basically vowed never to go back to an orphanage again. And then she was really low and she tried to commit suicide. So she walked across a road where the bus was coming, and she was saying, I have no idea why this happened, but the bus happened to stop right in front of me. And she said, I don't know why, because it was going at full speed. And she said that in that moment, she kind of felt like it was God that something was to do with God, and it, she got her kind of want for life back again, and she was really glad that she didn't die. She got involved in the streets, in gangs, became part of a gang, so she had knife scars up her, and involved with one of the guys, the gang leader, who would then basically use her to sleep with the different guys and stuff, because she was under his control. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, all this stuff is happening. By this point, Minda is 14. She then finds her mum again, her birth mum, yeah. And finds out that she has a little brother and a little sister, and her little brother is really, really sick. But her mum is not taking care of her little brother. So she got very angry, so she started selling herself so that she could earn money to help her little brother and pay for his medical stuff. And yeah, from that, when she was in that place one time helping her little brother, this woman came and found her and said, "Do you want to get out of this?" And she said yes. And she said, to this day, I have no idea why I said yes, because I'd sworn that I was never going to go back to a home or an orphanage. Mm-hmm. But I said yes. And then she was brought there to this house. At first, she hated it, mainly because there were a lot of Western people around, and she hated Western people because it was Western men, mainly, that would come to her mother's house, and her mother would treat them very sweetly and disregard her and her little brother as if they were nothing. So she said, "It's been amazing coming here and getting to know God, and my heart softening for Westerners and realizing that it's not the, you know, the Western culture that's like that. It's individual people." Mm-hmm. And she was the most full of life person. Like, Minda, she's so close to my heart.
I asked Alice why the girls in the Philippines were different from the drug addicts in Hong Kong.
In Hong Kong, we would, once a week, we would go to the girls' house and stay with the girls and stay the night there. So the girls' house in Hong Kong was similar to this house, except the girls are very different, because coming from a place in Hong Kong where it was drug addiction and where they were there instead of prison, girls have a very different attitude to when they've been rescued from trafficking. They're both horrific circumstances, but their attitudes are different. It's in my experience, it's been easier for the trafficked girls to kind of to want to be there. Although that is definitely not always the case. Sometimes they even want to go back to trafficking because they can't see any other way, or they can't see them being worth anything else. But a lot of the girls in Hong Kong would run away.
But why did Alice go and do this work? When most of your friends are at university studying, she said she was a new Christian, so I asked her what that meant.
I probably became a Christian when I was 17.
So that's quite later 18. On, yeah. So how did that happen? Was it just one day you woke up and found God, or how did that come about?
Well, actually, for me, I was brought up in a Christian family, which can go both ways depending on, you know, what goes on. But I was brought up with all of that. That when I was a teenager, I just, you know, I still had respect for that, and like, yes, that's, you know, the religion that my family, okay, and I respected it, and definitely loved God and believed in God. But in terms of living a Christian lifestyle, or like all the kind of Christian, I hate that word, things, I was like, oh, I just don't, it's too, I'm quite creative, and it was too structured and held down, I felt. But I got really ill and was on a lot of medication, and then basically prayed a lot and really sought God, and then was amazingly healed, like miraculously. I didn't need any of the medication. None of the doctors could understand. I was suddenly in this place of being completely healed, and just after my prayer and just knowing that it was God, there was no other way for it. And I can't really describe it, my heart completely changed, and the way that I thought about things and felt about things then was so different.
Would Alice say that she had used any of her own skills to make people's lives better?
In every single moment that I was out there, it was never because I was good at anything, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, it was never like, oh, good that I'm here because yeah, I'm good at this and I'm really benefiting mm-hmm. this. Like, it was that was what was so amazing, is I was like, I'm not equipped to be here. I have no training. I mean, we got training when we were there, but it was like, I'm not trained to be with this kind of people. You know, I'm not a psychologist or counsellor or a doctor or pastor or whatever. You know, I'm just a kid, basically.
Finally, Alice told me about an extraordinary meeting that made a massive impact on her.
Yeah. This guy who had a flesh disease on his leg, and he had had it for years and years and years, and his flesh was all mangled and smelt really bad, and so nobody would go near him. And he had a tiny little cramped flat in Hong Kong, and it smelt really bad. He couldn't take care of himself. And his flesh was basically open. It was this disease. So we went to pray for him, and it smelt terrible. I mean, it was really hot. But we went and prayed for him, basically said, can we pray for you? And he accepted, and we prayed, and went back a week later, and his leg was completely healed. And as he saw us, he was in the park, and as he saw us, couldn't speak a word of English, came like coming up to us like, oh, my leg, you know, it's completely, he was just so excited. That was really incredible. And then he took us up to his flat, and then we helped clean it. And then he wanted to like really know more about God, and wanted to get baptized and all this stuff, and it was incredible. Just people's lives completely transformed, but again, totally not in our strength.
Do you feel it was hard coming back to England as like a first world country, seeing everybody that's, you know, privileged and complaining about the little things like it's too cold out or the bus is late? It was tough to almost transition between the two.
I found the transition really tough. But also what was amazing is, what was really eye-opening for me coming back was seeing the struggle that people go through here. And it's not, the struggle isn't just in third world countries. I mean, even, you know, drug abuse and stuff like that. There's so much of it here, so much of it. It's just a lot more kind of, almost less serious. People don't see it as a big deal, but people, you know, and the rate of like depression and everything is so high, and there's a lot of crap that goes on in the UK that I feel like it's almost a lot more secretive and people don't know. It's almost a lot more behind doors, but it's in no way that we are a lot better off than them. It's just very different circumstances and situations. That was an eye opener for me, to not come back and be like, you guys don't know what's going on across the world. Because, I mean, who was I to say that? I've been there for, like, less than a year, and it's just very different. So that was interesting. But definitely when I first came back, in stuff like walking into kind of full supermarkets and, like, being able to buy whatever, or when people talked about things that you were just like, ah, It's not worth your breath talking about this stuff. It's just not important. And knowing where I fit in society as well.
My name is James.
I'm Ella.
Hi, I'm Oliver.
Hello, my name's Shauna.
Rhiannon.
I'm Ethan.
Hi, we're Jungle Doctors, and you're listening to Podium.me.